you beautiful bastards. Welcome back to the Thursday Philip DeFranco Show. Hit that like button to support the video and show. Hit that subscribe button for your chance to win $5,000 at the end of the month. And let's just jump into it. The first thing that we have to talk about today is this latest version of anti-vax tomfoolery. So I don't know if you've already seen it, but there's this video that's gone viral of an anti-vax nurse in Ohio trying to prove to Ohio lawmakers on Tuesday that COVID-19 vaccines make people magnetic. And a little spoiler alert, it did not go well for little Miss Magneto.
By the way, so I just found out something when I was on lunch, and I wanted to show it to you. We were talking about Dr. Tenpenny's testimony about magnetic vaccine crystals. So this is what I found out. So I have a key and a bobby pin here. Explain to me why the key sticks to me. It sticks to my neck, too. I got this. Yeah, so if somebody can explain this, that would be great. Any questions?
Actually, yes. Who dropped you on your head, you dumb asshole? Right, so naturally, this clip spreads across the internet, people mocking this woman, Joanna Overholt. And a little more background here, she was actually speaking at a hearing pushing for the passage of GOP-sponsored House Bill 248, which addresses civil liberties around vaccines. And if this is passed, it will bar vaccinations from being mandatory, stop businesses from denying unvaccinated people service, and outlaw obligations to disclose your vaccination status. And understand, Overholt was not alone here. Her testimony followed remarks from conspiracists Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, who had just touted this ridiculous theory right before.
But I'm sure you've seen the pictures all over the internet of people who've had these shots and now they're magnetized. They can put a key on their forehead, it sticks. They can put spoons and forks all over them and they can stick.
But people who've had these shots and now they're magnetized. They're magnetized. They're magnetized.
But also, what you should know about Tenpenny is that she's been cited by the nonprofit Center for Countering Digital Hate as a member of the Disinformation Dozen, which means that she is one of the 12 people responsible for 65% of anti-vaccine misinformation shared on the internet. And here's the thing, as many people have pointed out, including trained professionals, experts in their field, these two trained medical professionals seem to be ignoring any other logical explanation for why something would stick to them. Like sweat or sebum, or I mean, if you're more nefarious, glue. I use this word lightly. Luckily, it seems that most people are not buying into this ridiculous conspiracy bullshit, though not everyone. Many seeming just way more concerned that these two people are actually in the medical field. Also, if anything, they might have actually just encouraged more people to get vaccinated if they do believe it. Some writing things like, that's what I'm talking about. The idea that I won't keep losing my keys beside the whole saving me from COVID, that vax is a win-win. Also, something that I would recommend if you are someone that thinks the vaccine is turning people magnetic, or you know someone that thinks this. Or if something's sticking to you, let's say like on your arm, put some baby powder on it and then try again. In fact, we're already seeing some people that thought they were turning magnetic trying this and actually apologizing for promoting misinformation. Which, one, I will commend that man and really anyone else that will admit that they were wrong. That is a big, big important thing, and it feels like fewer people are capable of that every day. But also, two, I'm thankful for people like Hank Green, who, other than seemingly going crazy at times, spends a lot of time debunking bullshit, including this. Then, in eye-opening online creator money news / I picked the wrong job. Like, I'm doing well, but just, wow. One, we saw Corinna Kopf of David Dobrik Vlog Squad fame launching an OnlyFans. Last week, tweeting out 500,000 likes and I'm making an OnlyFans. While the tweet only hit 428,000 likes, that is still a ton of potential customers. Which is why yesterday she officially launched it with a subscription per month costing $25. And while we don't have exact dollar figures now, one, there's a ton of engagement on every post, thousands of likes. Her page as a whole has over 44,000 likes, and she's memeing about how much cash she's already made. Also this morning, claiming she is in the 0.01% of top OnlyFans earners. Though we have seen a little bit of a scandal and some anger around this already. This because according to a few people, as of last night, she had posted 11 photos, some of which were already on her Instagram, which then led to a number of people calling this a scam. Corinna then responding, it's not gonna be just Instagram content. If I posted everything right out the gate, it would just get leaked. Just wait. And actually, I mean, she was kind of right. There were people leaking the content, so much so that it appeared that she threatened someone with a lawsuit on Twitter. Now, she later deleted that specific tweet, but posted today that she has a long, long list of people who are leaking content, and adding that she's about to make more money off of these people than my OnlyFans itself. But yeah, regarding Corinna and OnlyFans, really any woman in OnlyFans, get that bag. If I can make that much dumb money off a bunch of horny dudes, I'd do it. I mean, maybe that's why I got a trainer, you don't know. Also, in the news today, it's not just the ladies bringing in the money. We also had another creator in the news because it appears that he accidentally leaked how much money he was making from just one sponsor. Aiden Ross, if you don't know, massive creator, absolutely massive streamer. And at one point during a stream yesterday, he was on Discord, he was looking for a conversation when, boom, it appeared that he accidentally opened up a conversation with someone by the name of Duelbets. And as Dixerto reports, Aiden told them they offered me a bag, presumably referring to Rubet, who he mentions later in the conversation. Duelbet says they offered you guys nearly $2 million a month. Ross appears to reply they offered 1.4 and didn't want to cover expenses. And adding that Rubet are covering expenses, they also get referral code money and they're getting more. And that is a just absolutely ungodly amount of money. I don't know if he's saying that he is making that by himself or it's kind of the house in general, right? This could include the likes of Rice Gum, FaZe Banks, Mike Malik. You know, over the years, I've had bad deals, I've had good deals. That is an insane number. One, I want to talk about the story because it's genuinely interesting, but two, I want to get out there. Do not think that other creators are making this amount of money on the regular, because that is an insane amount of money. Also, if I'm wrong, I'm more than happy for any other company out there to correct me with their wallets. But yeah, I mean, back to the story. Keep in mind, that is just one sponsor. That's not subscriptions, other sponsorships, merch, anything else. And also, something to consider, and granted, it's a little bit of an assumption. It's not fully clear that when Ross says expenses, what he's talking about, but it very likely could be that he's given money to play around with. So when you see those videos that go viral of really any creator that's doing the bets, just keep that in the back of your mind. Then, actually on the note of money, whether you're a Corinna Kopp or an Aiden Ross bringing in millions of dollars a month, or you're just Joe Blow, you're like a lot of people, you go paycheck to paycheck, you should definitely look into Public. And more specifically, publicdefranco.com. They are the fantastic sponsor of today's show, and I actually believe in them so much. I am an investor in the company. Also, listen up, I'm about to get a lot of you something for pretty much nothing. You know, one of the biggest financial things we've seen over the last year are a lot of regular people entering the stock market. And for that, no matter how big, no matter how small, I recommend Public. I personally switched when I was not too happy with one of their competitors. And with Public, not only did I get all the tools I wanted, the information that I wanted, but Public also makes the stock market social. Whether that be sharing and learning from other investors in the space, or they actually host talks with CEOs and higher ups of companies. When I say you can invest any amount of money, I mean that. They have features like fractional investing, which, if you didn't know, allows you to buy stocks in small slices. That way you can get, for example, some Tesla, Apple, or even Amazon stock without having to spend big. Hell, start with $50, $5, $1. And best of all, if right now you go to publicdefranco.com, you will receive a free stock once you open an account. So start investing in your tomorrow today and sign up at publicdefranco.com. Then, you know that major internet blackout that happened Tuesday? It happened for about an hour. I mean, Amazon, Reddit, The Guardian, The New York Times, massive sites went down. And very quickly, we learned that the company responsible for the issues was Fastly. They're a cloud computing company. Right? And so with that, there were a lot of questions. How did this happen? I mean, was there a hack? But now we know, according to Fastly, no, that is not what happened. Apparently what happened is that one of their customers changed their settings because of a bug that was in their software update that went out to their customers in mid-May. It caused 85% of their network to return errors, which one on its own is kind of funny, but also insane. And two, has also resulted in a big conversation of, isn't it kind of scary that there are only a few companies that control like our access to the biggest things that we use every day? And with outages seemingly being more frequent these days, I mean, there is a feeling of vulnerability when it comes to the internet as a whole. Then in actually more money news, though this one's different. While initial unemployment claims have fallen now for the sixth consecutive week, other data from the Labor Department indicates that consumer prices in May rose 5% over year. And that's the biggest leap since the summer of 2008, which was, of course, just before the U.S. was hit by the worst recession since the Great Depression. However, at the same time, the Federal Reserve does not seem hugely concerned about these jumps, saying that it believes that these are based on temporary factors related to the pandemic. For example, supply bottlenecks and other shortages brought on by the reopening of the economy. And so that's why it's believed by a number of people that the prices will come down as the year goes on. But that explanation has not completely shaken off the fears that this could potentially turn into something more. As the New York Times explains, the stakes are high on both Wall Street and Main Street. Inflation can erode purchasing power if wages do not keep up. A short-lived burst would be unlikely to cause lasting damage, but an entrenched one could force the Fed to cut its support for the economy, potentially tanking stocks and risking a fresh recession. Also, while we're talking about money, we should definitely talk about fraud as it relates to the pandemic. And over the past year, I've covered stories where we talked about specific areas where people committed fraud to get pandemic relief funds. But as it turns out, the degree of fraud that happened in this country may have been on a whole different level. And I say that because Axios published an article this morning that suggests that criminals may have stolen as much as half of US unemployment benefits over the last year. And citing several experts, they explain that unemployment fraud during the pandemic could easily reach $400 billion. And reportedly, much of that figure has landed in the hands of not only domestic gangs, but also of international crime syndicates, which is why this has been called not just theft, but a matter of national security. security. And while historically for these groups, unemployment insurance was not a lucrative target, obviously the pandemic changed that. Right, the United States went from a system of relatively rare and short claims to one of boosted claims for an extended period of time. And when all those massive layoffs happened last year, states just weren't prepared. They got an unprecedented volume of unemployment claims, with Axios adding, they all knew fraud was inevitable, but decided getting the money out to people who desperately needed it was more important than laboriously making sure all of them were genuine, which, of course, unfortunately allowed bad actors to game the system. And while the Treasury Department declined to confirm these estimates, we do know that at the end of last month, the Office of the Inspector General did release findings saying that $39 billion in unemployment money from the CARES Act had been wasted. Also, just last week, federal authorities accused a group of Venezuelans in Florida and Mexico of stealing $800,000 in stimulus money. So yeah, some of the biggest lessons here is, for the politicians out there that do want to push for recurring stimulus payments, addressing the fraud needs to be a key issue. And then, let's definitely talk about slander, extortion, and now Google announcing new steps to prevent schemes like this. Right, so to try to explain here, there are a number of websites that exist where people can anonymously post unsubstantiated rumors and hate about others. And if you then search that person's name, the post can appear high on Google's results, leading more and more people to read those comments. And while sometimes victims can get moderators on websites where the messages were posted to take them down, sometimes they can also be extorted for thousands of dollars. But now you have Google saying that they're planning on suppressing those types of websites from its search engine by changing the algorithm, with Google also notably adopting a policy called known victims. And there, people can report directly to Google that they're being extorted to have posts about them removed, and Google plans to automatically suppress links to those posts as well as similar content. Also, notably, it's not just slander. This also includes non-consensual nude or intimate photos, fake pornography, as well as some financial, medical, and other private info. And it does appear that this new policy comes partially in response to a New York Times piece that went out in April, which details how the slander industry profits off of its victims. And as the Times notes here around Google's announcement, Google, which fields an estimated 90% of global online search, historically resisted having human judgment play a role in its search engine. Although it has bowed to mounting pressure in recent years to fight misinformation and abuse appearing at the top of its results. But also with this, I mean, there are concerns on both sides. Right, for the victims of slander or non-consensual photos and things like that, will Google actually do a good job here? And then on the other side of this, you have concerns of, okay, let's say you did a bad thing, right? You got exposed for something. Will this system be abused by people that want to knock down those search results? And I mean, even one of Google's vice presidents said, I doubt it will be a perfect solution, certainly not right off the bat. But they're also noting, I think it really should have a significant and positive impact. We can't police the web, but we can be responsible citizens. But yeah, especially with this one, I would love to know your thoughts. You think this is a good thing, bad thing, something in between, or you're holding judgment? Then we should definitely talk about the highly controversial Keystone XL pipeline in the news. I mean, it's been in the news for the past 13 years. First announced in 2008, it would have carried oil from the tar sands in Alberta, Canada to the Gulf Coast. It was an estimated $8 billion pipeline. And over the years, we saw a coalition of environmentalists, indigenous tribes, scientists, and others lobbying against it. Very quickly, this project became a huge centerpiece in the debate over fossil fuels and climate change, changing public opinion, spurring other efforts to stop separate pipeline projects in multiple states. And in recent years, there was a will they, won't they with the pipeline. In 2015, then-President Obama announced that his administration would reject the construction permit. Then Trump gets elected. He reverses the order 2 days after his inauguration. Then the project moved forward until 2018, when a federal judge blocked construction in the United States on the grounds that Trump had not done a proper environmental review before rescinding Obama's policy. We see legal battles from this. Ultimately, the Supreme Court upholds the lower court's decision to block construction in the U.S. The company behind this, TC Energy, said it would reassess the project in the United States, though they still proceeded in Canada. Then, first day in Biden's office, he revoked the permit to the project again. All of that brings us to the news today that the company behind the pipeline has officially ended the project. And with this, unsurprisingly, the government of Alberta, Republicans, and oil companies condemned this move. But you also had many groups who had fought against this project cheering on the decision, also using this moment to pressure Biden to end other pipeline projects, including the highly controversial Dakota Access Pipeline, as well as the Line 3 pipeline in Minnesota, which attracted hundreds of protesters earlier this week. Also, while we're talking about Biden and the administration, we should definitely talk about today. They announced that they're purchasing 500 million Pfizer COVID-19 vaccines to donate to the global supply, with the White House saying in a statement that it will give 250 million full doses to lower middle income countries in the African Union. Also describing the effort as the largest ever purchase and donation of vaccines by a single country, and calling on the world's democracies to do their parts in contributing to the global supply of safe and effective vaccines, with 200 million of the doses expected to be delivered by the end of this year, with the remaining 300 being distributed in the first half of 2022. And then finally, I wanted to talk about it earlier this week. Congress actually agreed on something. Now, we're starting to see that situation develop, kind of how we expected it.
it would.
So this week, the U.S. Senate passed a $250 billion bill that supports American high-tech investment and provides funding to counter political influence by the Chinese Communist Party. And more specifically, as reports explain, it pours more than $50 billion in immediate funding into U.S. businesses that manufacture the sort of ultra-small, in-demand computer chips that power consumer and military devices, which many companies source from China. It also includes billions in extra funding for research and development at the Energy Department, the Pentagon, and NASA, including in the areas of artificial intelligence, quantum computing, robotics, and 5G. Also, this will authorize $300 million to counter the political influence of the Chinese Communist Party. It commissions a study into the origin of the coronavirus and prevents federal funds from going to the Wuhan Institute of Virology while that is underway. It ramps up existing sanctions relating to human rights abuses, cyber attacks, intellectual property theft, and more. Finally, with at least what we're touching on here, it calls for a diplomatic boycott of the 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing. And, you know, this is very much a China competition bill. Even Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer saying on the floor, around the globe, authoritarian governments smell blood in the water. They believe that squabbling democracies like ours can't come together and invest in national priorities the way a top-down, centralized, and authoritarian government can. They are rooting for us to fail so they can grab the mantle of global economic leadership and own the innovations. One of the big updates here is that Beijing has responded, and no surprise, they're not happy. Beijing's Foreign Affairs Committee of China's National People's Congress issued a strongly worded message against the bill, claiming the bill is full of Cold War mentality and ideological prejudice, and saying it slanders China's development path and its domestic and foreign policies. You know, on top of being angry at the United States' new spending bill, China has been increasingly frustrated with American and other Western sanctions. Right, the Chinese Communist Party hoping the sanctions would be eased when Biden took office. Right, you had that orange fella saying Biden is essentially in China's pocket. But funny enough, President Biden has actually doubled down on some Trump-era policies, even going as far as to expand a ban on U.S. investment in Chinese companies. And as far as China here, it looks like they're going to retaliate. Right. Earlier this year, the country passed targeted sanctions on certain Western scientists and U.S. officials for their parts in criticizing China's actions in Xinjiang and Hong Kong. And now, China just passed a law this afternoon that would allow it to expedite retaliatory sanctions against the U.S. and other countries. And the puppet, that is Carrie Lam, telling local Hong Kong media that Western governments would get a taste of their own medicine. But ultimately, we're gonna have to wait and see. And actually, with this story or anything else that stood out to you today, I'd love to know your thoughts because one, this is always supposed to be a conversation, and two, this is the end of today's show. And ultimately, with this story or honestly anything else that stood out to you today, I'd love to know your thoughts because one, this is a conversation, and two, this is the end of today's show. As always, thank you for being a part of this family, watching the video, like and subscribe, and all the good stuff. But yeah. As always, my name's Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces, and I'll see you next time.